Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Welcome to an all-new episode of The Payoff. Jeff, happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I know. Happy Valentine's Day. What a way to celebrate.
There's nothing I'd rather be doing than watching wrestling with you.
I know we just had last night, I feel it is a missed opportunity that they went with NXT Vengeance Day versus St. Valentine's Day, like massacre again. This is really just I get it. But at the same time, like, come on, like, this is what we love as fans.
It's interesting because when they first announced that, on Wrestling Inc., the headline was, WWE bringing back old pay-per-view concept. And I'm like, oh, it's great. It's St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And it was Vengeance Day. I'm like, what the hell?
Right. How did I get there? Well, I read something that was along the lines of like, they don't want massacre or something like that, which it's like, if that's what they're being nitpicky about right now, like, come on, like, whatever. So it's, it's built in. It's in your house. Like, and it didn't have a name for a few weeks either. So whatever, but okay.
Well, and for those that are not aware, the real St. Valentine's Day Massacre was a 1929 murder of 7 members and associates of Chicago's Northside Gang that occurred on St. Valentine's Day. So February 14th, 1921, a warehouse at Dickens and Clark in Lincoln Park, Chicago at 10:30 a.m. Central.
Look at you with the history lesson. That was nice.
I looked it up on Wikipedia. I knew there was something. I didn't know what it was.
What a thing to name a pay-per-view after,
So there you go. It was a different time in 1999, but you are correct. They probably couldn't use this now. So, right. I don't know. Did you pick this match or did I?
This was one, I think this was, this could be the start of our expanded list of matches. I don't know specifically who picked this one, but I know that it's been on our list. And in that kind of, we are now officially deep on the road to WrestleMania, which is of course everyone's favorite time of year. So it's exciting to kind of, be on that and be doing that. But and pretty soon here, we're going to start getting in about 2 weeks now. We've got the first of our WrestleMania kind of matches coming up. They're actually about 3 weeks. Just kind of wanted to squeeze these couple in because those good stories that we wanted to kind of talk about and cover and things that, these fan requested as well, too. Like, we hear it from people. So just a lot of reasons to do this. But I don't remember who picked it specifically.
Yeah, this is going to be fun because, I know next week we have another really good road to WrestleMania kind of angle and match. Yep. So this is just two really good ones in a row of that, the shows that took place between the Rumble and WrestleMania. And now, Jeff, we have what? So we have Fastlane and we have Elimination Chamber before WrestleMania this year.
We got Elimination Chamber is in about a week. Yeah. Or this week, excuse me. We're stacked heavy on the pay-per-views right now with TakeOver, then Elimination Chamber, then Fastlane is mid March. And then we're looking at early April, night one or two of WrestleMania.
Yeah. So there's a lot that is happening, it's not which I don't love. I like the idea of someone wins the Rumble, they declare we're on the road to WrestleMania, but now it's like we have to produce, an NXT and two, main roster pay-per-views before we get to WrestleMania now. So the road to WrestleMania is long and winding compared to how it was back in this era of 1999. So let's get right into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So we are at the Memphis Pyramid in Memphis, Tennessee. What I thought was interesting, because I just put this on this morning, and the very beginning of the show, Cole's like, this is the first ever pay-per-view in Memphis. And I found that hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So this is it. This is your first WWF pay-per-view ever taking place in Memphis, February 14th, 1999. You know, what a great way to spend a Valentine's Day, either watching this on pay-per-view with the person in your life you love, or if you're in the Memphis area, just taking them down to the wrestling arena to check out this show. So
it's a nice Sunday night, you know. You figure at that point, pay-per-view is, you know, under 3 hours, you know, so who wouldn't want to, you know, spend some time watching some wrestling on a Sunday?
You know, you're dating someone for a couple of weeks, couple of months, whatever it is. And, you know, not only do you have to smarten them up that you're a wrestling fan, but you also have to tell them that your big Valentine's Day plans are to take them to a wrestling show, or maybe cook them dinner and order a wrestling pay-per-view.
I will say, for, you know, kind of insight to you and my life, you know, I've known each other for a long time, and I remember the partner that I'm with right now, and when we were first dating, which is this point, it was years ago, you would keep, you know, prodding me of, have you told her yet? Does she know you're a wrestling fan? Like, you know, has she watched it? And so she's picked up a few, you know, she likes Kevin Owens, she likes Sasha Banks. And so, you know, I'm okay with that. She likes Naomi too. And so, she has been, you know, brought into the wrestling world a little bit. She'll occasionally watch a, you know, big pay-per-view with me or something like that. But, yeah, hey, you know, I that's how I would want to spend Valentine's Day. So, you know, that's just how it is.
I'm just trying to think of all the things that would be easier to tell someone.
Right. Yeah. Like, this is my dark secret.
Think,
yep.
Yeah. You know, I think like, you know, I, Susie, I gotta tell you, I've been divorced. Oh, okay. You know, Susie, I, you know, just did a little time. It was a petty crime. It was a number of years ago. Oh, okay. Maybe even, look, I have a kid. I'm a 4-year-old kid, and you know, I had good terms with his mother, and you know,
yep.
I spend every other weekend,
yep.
spend
yep.
every other weekend with him, you know, or you know, Susie, I'm between jobs right now, but you know, it's, look, I'm not the end of the world, and I'll certainly figure it out. I think those conversations might be easier than, I'm 36 years old. I still watch professional wrestling.
Yep.
What, you mean like you put it on Monday sometimes? No. Like I have the network, and I go to some WrestleManias, and I watch it every week, and I watch the pay-per-views, and listen to wrestling podcasts. And so, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I don't know where it ranks. I mean, it just depends on
and it's not just Monday night. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Sundays, some weeks, Saturdays, some other weeks. Like, yeah. So that's how it goes.
So this is a fun show. We start off with Gold Dust defeating Blue Dust in a 3-minute match. You know, I forget. I mean, Gold Dust in this character, I mean, he'd do other stuff later on, but in this kind of traditional Gold Dust character, I mean, he did this for like 4 or 5 years. It was a longer run than I remembered of just the traditional, you know, Gold Dust music, Gold Dust presentation. So he wins that match in 3 minutes. We get a hardcore championship match, 10 minutes. Bob Holly, hardcore Holly, defeated Al Snow, who was accompanied to the ring by Head.
Oh, yeah.
We then get the Big Boss Man defeating Midian in 6 minutes. So, you know, kind of a doozy of a 3-match opener. You know, I think everyone romanticizes on everything in the Attitude Era being perfect and incredible, and every guy was a great wrestler and great character. I don't know, man. I mean,
yeah.
Then we get the tag team champions of Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart defeating D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry. Okay. Val Venus, who is accompanied by Ryan Shamrock, Ken's sister, I believe, in storylines.
Forgot about that. Yep.
Defeated Ken Shamrock for the Intercontinental Championship. So Val Venus is your Intercontinental Champion. Billy Gunn was the friend of the payoff, was the special guest referee in that match. I believe Val Venus ended up marrying Ryan Shamrock in real life.
Okay.
I believe. I could.
You keep talking and I'll look it up.
Okay. Then we get a tag team of the Corporation, which was China and Kane, and they would defeat D-Generation X, that was Triple H and X-Pac in a tag match. So China is split off from DX. She is part of the Corporation along with Kane. I guess Kane was corporate Kane before he was corporate Kane, huh?
Okay, that's all right.
And then the reason we're here, our double main event, first, in a last man standing match for the WWF Championship, we get Mankind and The Rock ending in a draw. So they have this great match, and then they do this like double chair shot to end it. It was, for as brutal of a match as it is, remember, we're coming off the I Quit match with the, 533 chair shots to the head. Coming off of that, we get this. And it's, again, a really good 22-minute match. These two were money together, but it ends in, what they were trying to do of the Rocky 1 final, where both guys kind of hit each other and fall down. I think Rocky 1. That's what Mick Foley had always said they were trying to emulate, but it was just a lousy way to end it in a draw. Don't quote me on this. In February 14th, I was going to say they were building towards the Empty Arena Super Bowl match, but that would have already taken place. So I don't know why they did this draw and what happened after that to eventually then get to, The Rock is your champion. So obviously The Rock would get the title back. He'd go into WrestleMania as champion. So that's not why we're here to talk about that one, but maybe we can break down that feud and even that match at some point. But again, Mankind's your champion at this point. It ends in a draw, but Rock would get the title so that he was ready for WrestleMania 15 and Stone Cold Steve Austin. Steve Austin chasing that title to win it again for the second straight WrestleMania. But the reason we're here, Steve Austin, Vince McMahon in a cage match, the old school cage, but it's painted black. And I loved it. It's like my favorite cage of all time, I think. So this match had a stipulation, which was to determine the number one contender for the championship at WrestleMania 15. So Steve Austin gets his crowning moment at 14, but he's dealing with Mr. McMahon's bullshit all year, and he's trying to get back to the top of the mountain. And man, was Steve Austin over at this point. Great gate, dude. I mean, this is when business was just so hot. Jam-packed, 18,000+ in attendance, gate of over 300,000, sold over 140,000 of merch. What a night, man. And what a great card for a quote-unquote B-show. So storyline standpoint, I mean, we could talk Austin McMahon all day, but how do we end up with this match and this stipulation?
Yeah. And before we get into that, incorrect. Valvinus, actually, Ken Shamrock was actually dating Ryan Shamrock.
Oh, so it's even weirder. Okay.
Yes. And yes, so
storyline sister.
And then I have in here as well too, it says unconfirmed, but kind of what my kind of quick search is, there were plans apparently by Vince to do an incest angle between her and her storyline brother, Ken Shamrock, who she was dating in real life at that time. So
considering some of the other stuff they did in this era, why the hell not?
Yeah. And so if you can give birth to a hand, you can do an incest angle. So, but also kind of the quick little fact that we didn't know here, that Val Venus's actual sister was married to Adam Copeland, or as we know him, Edge, for about four years. Yep.
I think so, that's what I was thinking of. Okay.
Yep. And so, and they were together for about 6 or 7 years. So there you go. So
I'll tell you, Adam here, the moral of the story is Adam Copeland loves dating and marrying women in the wrestling business. One guy's sister, another guy's girlfriend that was an active performer, another wrestler after.
Yep, absolutely. So
there's probably a few others we don't know about.
Well, and it's good to see a young guy like that getting a push nowadays too. But you know, we'll get into that on a different day. So, the build, where are we at on this one? We got a lot to talk about today. That's all right. Good stuff. And so, for the longest time, Vince and Stone Cold, just, you know, Steve Austin, however you want to look at it, call him, like, they had just had a feud for years. It was on and off, you know, come and go. You had all these different players and things like that, but at the core of it, like, McMahon and Austin always had a feud. Now, we're obviously February 1998 or 1999 at this point. Kind of doing my research on this one. This pay-per-view was 1999. 1998 and 1999, Austin and Vince were the feud of the year from Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
They were the feud of the year in 98 and 99?
Yes. And so, you know, you're getting this pay-per-view at a time where these two are like, they are in the heat of it. Like, there's no question that that these guys hate each other. The story's there. So you had a lot of, like, you and I could really take a year and analyze the parts of the Austin McMahon feud and just kind of, you know, you'd get a different story every time. And so, but I actually really like this one. So what you have here, it was that December, actually, for a while there, they weren't, you know, it wasn't a lot happening, but we start, you know, 1999 kind of ramping this up, and you had Austin facing the Undertaker. It was a Buried Alive match at the Royal, that was the December show, but the Royal Rumble qualification was on the line with that Buried Alive match. And then it was rock bottom December 1998. You had Austin defeating the Undertaker with the help from Kane. And so after that point, you had a $100,000 bounty, if you will, that anyone that could eliminate Austin from the Royal Rumble match. So he had won his way into the Royal Rumble. And then you have this piece of the feud where $100,000, which, hey, that's 1999 money. Like, that ain't nothing to scoff at. And so, and to put that out there. And so one of the quotes I put on here is, I was kind of doing my research and found, says, when the boss is willing to give six figures to the man who takes the Texas Rattlesnake out of commission, it builds on a few aspects of WWE continuity. The sheer insane number of people Austin more than rubbed the wrong way since 1996. McMahon's willingness to throw money at any problem since he was outed, quote unquote, as the owner. The proliferation of factions since 1997. Please bring that back. Meaning everyone but Austin has someone watching their back. And the fact that the company relied less on old school ideas of good guys and bad guys. And so, to me, like, hey, like, we are all about the build and the payoff around here. And so to call back and kind of have, even if it was like a writer, but to throw back to that, you know, 2-3 years prior to all this happening and looking at like the landscape of all of wrestling to understand kind of what's happening and what he needed to, you know, what he was dealing with. $100,000 to do that, it makes a ton of sense to me. Like, it's perfect. And so, so what you had, though, Royal Rumble 1999, it was actually, thanks to help from the corporation's attack on Austin, it was actually during the match. And that might sound a little weird in this, you know, the Shawn Michaels rule and all this other stuff, you know, but Austin and McMahon actually went under the ropes and not over them. Of course, that's the, you know, the Royal Rumble rule. And so no elimination occurred, and, you know, they both feet on the floor, it didn't matter, but they didn't go over the top rope. So, the corporation and the Rock distracting Austin. And then you actually had McMahon flipping Austin over the top rope at the end of the match here, winning the Royal Rumble and a title shot at WrestleMania 15, who, not only being a member of the corporation, but also the WWE champion at the time, The Rock. And so while he tossed both The Rock and Austin over, The Rock was the champ. And so you've got this weird, now you're starting to see that, you know, the storyline coming together. So I was curious because over the years, like, the corporation has had just a lot of different people in it. And so I was curious as to, at this point in the Royal Rumble in 1999, who was the, you know, who was the go-to person, like, or excuse me, who were the members of the corporation? So you had Vince, of course, The Rock is kind of the big name on that one. Ken Shamrock, Pat Patterson, and Gerald Briscoe, Sergeant Slaughter, which huge fan favorite around here at the payoff. We realized after we did an episode of Sergeant Slaughter, and then Test and Kane as well too. And so big names, you know, makes sense. Like, I, you know, we all very vividly remember the Pat Patterson, Gerald Briscoe always being with Vince and things like that. And so, just kind of interested. So you have just really a week or two later, you have Vince, who not a full-time wrestler, but still winning the Royal Rumble, said that he was vacating his spot at WrestleMania. Now, Tom's, you know, all-time favorite wrestler, Shawn Michaels, was commissioner at this time. And so him and, hey, like, this makes sense. Like,
we and I love thought, you know, I thought Shawn Michaels with no, you know, managerial experience did a very nice job in that role.
Hey, and you too. Like, I know that you've had a day as commissioner, and so, hey, it's not an easy job. And so, you know, it's, you have lived in the shoes of Shawn Michaels, so you know what you're talking about. So
I was commissioner for a day at the Performance Center, and I made what I thought was the right decision. It was very difficult, but I had to restart a match because there was interference. And, you know, it's challenging because am I throwing the referees under the bus? Is it going to be bad for morale in the locker room? But ultimately, I decided that it was the right thing to do. And as a leader, as a general manager in professional wrestling, you have to make the difficult decisions. And Jeff, I was willing to do that.
And they didn't teach you that either. Like, you just came up with that on the fly, right?
You don't, Jeff, you don't learn that stuff in college. They don't.
That's teach right. You. Hey, it's one of those things. Yeah. So, but of course, so, you know, Tom's at this point, predecessor, Shawn Michaels, is commissioner, and making sense from a storyline perspective, said that if the winner of the Royal Rumble cannot wrestle in the WrestleMania main event, that it makes sense that the runner up would take their place. The runner up being Stone Cold Steve Austin. And so this, of course, just absolutely pissed off Vince on every level. And we ended up, you know, really using this to get really Austin goading McMahon into a match at this St. Valentine's Day Massacre in your house. So, you know, it made sense from that perspective of, you know, he wanted a chance to fight McMahon, especially after the Royal or after the Royal Rumble, but and he wanted it so bad that he was like willing to risk that WrestleMania place for a chance for this match. And so in order to, like, you know, kind of, especially with the corporation and everything happening, this match then also turned into not just a one-on-one match, singles match, but it was inside of a steel cage. And so, and the build up to this as well too, it was just, it was really the kind of week before this was, you know, when I say Raw was being taped, it was Raw Saturday night. Austin was forced by McMahon to run the gauntlet of a corporation members. And so at the end of that, you know, kind of your go home for the pay-per-view, McMahon pinned Austin for a win after going through the gauntlet of corporation members, which then brings us to, again, Valentine's Day, everyone's favorite Saturday or Sunday night date, St. Valentine's Day Massacre in your house, 1999. And so from a build perspective, we're making a lot of sense at this point. And so, you know, what the stakes and all that other stuff. And I, you know, we hear about that a lot of times nowadays with, from, I say, legend wrestlers and commentators, stuff like that. Like, stakes are important. You got to have that. And for this one, like, the stakes are there. It made total sense of kind of what we were dealing with and what was going on.
Well, and stakes are so important now, especially because the titles mean nothing. You know, yeah. Very little. They're props, right? So, you know, it's become even harder to create a reason to care about a match because there's so many more matches that are taking place because the titles don't mean as much because there's so many of them out there. So, yep. Yeah, just some good old fashioned stakes make it fun. So, all right, you ready?
Man, let's get into this. I'm excited. Let's do this.
All right. So, we are at the 2-hour and 28-minute portion of St. Valentine's Day Massacre, February 14th, 1999, on the network. So, again, 2-hour, 28-minute mark. Are you ready?
I am almost ready. My, of course, my network shut down on this one. And so if you could stall for a hot second here.
Yeah, yes, you've never not been ready before.
This is the first time.
Not ready.
In a year and a half or however long we've been doing this. Yeah, this is getting close to 2 years here.
All right, we're at the 2 hour and 28 minute mark of St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Jeff, are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
You are ready this time. All right.
I am ready this time.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right. So McMahon circling the ring.
Not just this is the jacked McMahon. Let's be clear jacked about that.
Mr.
too.
McMahon. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Slowly working his way into the ring.
So. So you mentioned this was the feud of the year 2 years in a row, which would have been 98, which was, you know, him becoming champion. And then 99, this second year where, you know, he's just trying to screw Austin out of the title for, you know, the second half of 98 and then, you know, continuing in 99 and we've got the corporation and we've got a heel Rock and, just a lot of stuff going on here. You forget how often Austin wasn't champion and he was, you know, he was chasing. But the chase, I mean, obviously was where the money was in this feud and in this rivalry. Dude, you know what's crazy? And you know, I had on my list to talk about was this feud went on for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, 90, you just look at your WrestleManias here and it's like, they were feuding in during WrestleMania 14 and 15. And then, you know, Austin's out with the neck injury in 16, but then 17, you know, there's more Austin McMahon and then, you know, the heel turn. I mean, it's just crazy that this went on for so long. I mean, is it the greatest feud in the history of professional wrestling?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, and we may have like, you know, you might call back to, you know, something with Ric Flair or Hogan or something like that. But I think over the, you take from when it wasn't one specific angle that kind of made this feud what it was. You had years of up, down, heel, face, faction, not faction. Like it was all aspects of wrestling between these two guys. And whether, you know, there's of course argument of whether or not Vince should have been the one to, you know, deal with that and carry that if, like, you know, he's not the young guy trying to get over, but damn it, if it didn't work on almost every single level.
I mean, it worked. It was flawless. You know, I mean, it just fit. So, so, I mean, it's like, I think this is probably the greatest rivalry ever. You know, I mean, look, it's everything about it's magic. Like, you know, a strong argument can be made that Steve Austin's the biggest baby face in the history of wrestling. Okay. Mm-hmm. The most over guy in his prime. You can make a strong argument that Vince McMahon's the greatest heel in the history of professional wrestling. I actually think that's an even easier argument to make. I mean, I think he is the greatest heel hands down. You know, with best baby face ever. I mean, maybe you could argue Hogan over Austin, but gosh, I just think, you know, Vince McMahon, no question, greatest heel ever. So that's now, I think there, you could say there might be better angles because this angle, I mean, there is, you know, this wasn't an angle. This was a, you know, multi-year feud. I think maybe you could say, hey, the Hogan Savage stuff was better. The Hogan Andre stuff was better. Portions of the, you know, NWO first getting formed were better. But gosh, I mean, just in terms of longevity and the overall feud, this is just as good as it gets. So Austin is just kind of pounding McMahon. He fakes the knee injury. He's got him on the outside of the ring. Technically, the match has not started yet, but Steve Austin's just beating the shit out of him.
Yeah, this again, a steel cage match, and we are nowhere near the being about to be inside the steel cage. And this reminds me too, as we're kind of watching this and all the cameraman like kind of shuffling outside the ring. I had forgotten, I think you and I have both recently watched the Yokozuna documentary on the Icons, which is just fantastic. But
it was excellent. It was absolutely excellent. It was so good.
and you and I have said this for years, like when it comes to putting a video package together, I don't know anyone that rivals WWE, like ESPN, all this other shit. Like they, when it's time to put together a video package, those people aren't making enough money. And so
go watch ESPN, go watch the Super Bowl, go watch anything. There is not a better video package, you know, just better 3 to 5 minute video package, or I mean, even these documentaries that they're cranking out on the network. I mean,
and we're about to get a lot more of them. Yep.
Oh yeah. With NBC. I mean, at worst, the stuff that the WWE does is on par with like ESPN's 30 for 30, HBO's documentaries. Yep. At worst, it's on par.
You know,
argument can be better. Yeah. I mean, the Jordan Last Dance thing, I mean,
yeah,
the Undertaker thing was just as good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. You put the two of those next to each other in regards to like people who just enjoy documentaries, knowing nothing about wrestling or even nothing about Michael Jordan in basketball. Like you probably have some name. It makes sense. But
I think your average 30 for 30 isn't as good as the stuff you'll see on the network.
I agree. And so the spot we have not seen in many, many years was the camera exploding spot from the ringside cameraman to distract the wrestler. That's just one of those spots where we haven't seen it in quite or ever or, you know, or since that time. Absolutely. So again, we're wrestling a steel cage match, but they are probably about they're like upper or the top of the lower deck fighting on the stairs. Now they're finally back around ringside, but they were up there, and now we're going up the entry ramp as well. Oh no,
he's
on the
just
other side.
He's just pounding McMahon, and clearly, he's hitting him. He's hitting him nice and snug. I mean, you know, that's what Vince wanted. I mean, it was, you know, you better lay it in.
And I'll never, you know, we don't always have to like everything wrestling does, like, you know, especially the most recent clip of Vince taking the bump that Gronk was worried about taking. Like, Vince ain't scared to take a bump, even at, you know, his however old he is. Yeah, you know, in his 70s. So, yeah, it's just how it is.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, he probably still looks like this with his shirt off. I mean, he's just in such good shape.
Dude's jacked. Yeah. Well, you hear about him and Triple H. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say their workout regimen. They're up at 4 a.m. Like, you know, they are up and working out and doing their thing. And by the time most people are finally rolling out of bed, they've had a 6-hour day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, there is nobody. There may be nobody on this planet that can outwork Vince McMahon.
Whether you like the storylines or not, it doesn't matter. Yep.
No, whether you like Vince or not, respect him or not, think he's, you know, a good guy, bad guy, whatever. Dude, I mean, there is no one, you know, so every bit of success that company has received and he has received, he's earned it. And there is nobody that will outwork the guy. There is no one in the history of wrestling. I don't think there's anyone in the history of business that is just out, you know, at that level, right? That has just outworked Vince McMahon. I mean, you know, you stack him up with other CEOs and entrepreneurs and dude, no one can touch this guy.
No, absolutely. So here you go.
And it may not be healthy, but it's like the guy doesn't take vacations. He doesn't have hobbies. So they're on the side of the cage now. They're both kind of climbing up and they're
the outside of the cage, not the inside of the cage for everyone. Yep. And they're on the ring or the announce table side of the cage.
And there it is.
Oh, what a bounce. Yeah. And so Austin slamming McMahon's head into the top of the cage, McMahon bouncing back and landing on top of the announce table
Michael Cole said he may be dead. And you'll see it on the replay. I mean, for those that don't remember this, I mean, it's just one of the most awkward landings you'll ever see. He could not have landed worse on this table.
Well, and how hard he threw himself off of the cage. Yeah, absolutely. There you go with the replay. Yep.
I mean, his spine lands right on the floor.
Yeah. And so miss that. Yeah. If you know, because the angle, directly he hit the edge of the table and his spine just straight on that. So that good thing he didn't short hop it. Jeez.
Brutal. So again, the match still hasn't actually started yet, but Vince is just getting pounded.
Yep. Ref's checking on him at this point too.
So you mentioned Patterson and Briscoe. Have you seen the Pat Patterson documentary on the network?
No. Yet? Yeah. And that's one I need to watch because I was catching up on other ones and just kind of checking out things. And so, and like, you know, old NXT UK, just, I'm ready for the takeover and things like that. But yeah, no, I have not, but it's on my list to probably watch, this weekend.
Yeah. And that's one you can absolutely watch with the, significant other, because it's just an interesting story. I mean, it's more about, you know, his life and how he grew up. And I mean, dude, the story of like how he started working with Vince McMahon in the office, there were a couple lines, and Pat Patterson was just a really funny guy. There were a couple lines he had in that documentary, and I'm sitting in bed watching it, and I am laughing my ass off. I mean, he's just a funny, funny guy. What a life, what a career. Oh, I mean, it was fantastic. And it's only an hour long, but it was just so good.
Interesting. Yeah. It's one, it's good to see that they're, you know, kind of steering into that. It'll be interesting how things kind of adjust with the moving to Peacock and things like that. And just trying to figure out, you know, how things are going to be different, but you know, they're providing the content though, that they should be at the documentaries or things like that, that, you know, and I really enjoyed that Yokozuna one. I was glad it wasn't like a 30, 45 minute. I wanted the AJ kind of debut at Royal Rumble one to be a little bit longer, because I feel like there's so many stories to tell there. But I think I texted you during the Yokozuna one where we were having the conversation of just like, man, these people, like, they've genuinely, like, you know, he was like obviously a far better guy than any of us ever knew. But then also like some of these, you know, the fans and, or not fans, but like Undertaker and Kevin Nash, like, were like legitimately moved and like hurt when he died, even though because they saw it coming. Like, they knew, like, that, you know, if something bad was going to happen, because it just, he was just such a huge man. Like, there's just nothing you could do.
Well, so Steve Austin's got the mic and he's just talking shit at McMahon. McMahon's in a neck brace on a stretcher. So this is just great, great stuff. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, and you know, you mentioned this NBC Universal deal, which, look, it is as much of a win-win-win as possible. So NBC is getting a massive, massive load of content, okay? Mm-hmm. This isn't like a TV series. This is tens of thousands of hours of content, okay? Yep. So whatever they spent, $200 million a year, it's worth it. I mean, yeah. Hell, what's The Office? I mean, what did they pay, you know, what did they pay the Office streaming?
Well, and that was even a conversation I've had with my buddies of, we were not going to get Peacock just for The Office. Like, that was not a selling point for me. Yeah. All right. Now they've got that entire fan base where, even if some of them are like, you know, like tertiary watchers or understanding of wrestling, it doesn't matter. They get it for free now.
So the Office is $100 million per year, and that's a 5-year deal. So it was 5 years, $500 million just for that TV show. Okay.
Yep. That's 200 episodes, give or take. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about right. It's probably over 200. And then HBO bought Friends, which was the other massive just individual TV. I'm just seeing if I can find it here. I'm assuming comparable. So, you know, just for some perspective. So if the top shows, okay, so $80 million a year is what Friends goes for.
For how long does it say?
Same deal, 5-year deal. So okay. $425 million over 5 years. And then I would assume Seinfeld's probably in that realm. So the mm-hmm. point being is that those are all, you know, around $100 million a year. So if you're getting WWE, millions of fans, you already broadcast, you know, one of their shows, two of their shows, really, with NXT and Raw. It might even be a bargain. WWE's making more from this deal, and they don't even have to run the network now. They can just say, here's our content. So again, I think win, win, win. And then the fans win because, you know, there is a free Peacock version. I don't know what will be included on that. But I mean, for $5, you have everything that WWE's ever done and will ever do. and you're getting it for minimal commercials, or for $10, you're getting what you had on the network. Oh, and you're getting NBC, you're getting the Peacock. And I'll tell you what, Peacock's awesome. I've been, you know, The Office is on there. Then season three of The Office, they added the extended versions of those episodes.
Yeah, the bonus stuff, yeah.
Which I love watching. Those have been, I've watched them all. Those are great. I mean, you have all the old Datelines, you have Yellowstone on there, you have a ton of shows, movies. I think Peacock, I love their user layout and stuff too. So I think it's a great service. So again, as a wrestling fan, you're getting Peacock and the network for what you were spending in the network, or you can save the $5 per month. And then the other interesting thing I was thinking about, Jeff, is, you know, being a wrestling fan used to cost a lot more. So you figure if you ordered all the pay-per-views, well, the other crazy thing too, is you had WWF and you had WCW. So you could spend $60 per month on pay-per-views or more. Mm-hmm. Then you still might buy the DVDs. So, I mean, so wrestling could cost $500 to $1,000 to watch, and now it costs $60 to $120, basically. And then maybe if you want to buy an AEW pay-per-view. But it's a fraction of the cost to get way more value. I just think of how expensive it used to be when, you know, I was a kid ordering pay-per-views, buying DVDs. It was way more expensive, you know. And that's in those dollars, not even in today's dollars. So, way easier to be a fan.
So we got to focus. So Austin had McMahon beat, and he was at the bottom step of walking out of the cage. And then McMahon started flipping off Austin. And Austin has ripped off the neck brace at this point too. And Austin turned around as he could have won, you know, threw up the, oh, you know, is he flipping me off? And then went back in the ring, and now we're fighting again. And McMahon, having the upper hand, is now climbing over the top of the cage. And then Austin chasing him as well.
Oh, I mean,
great, great visual. Yep. Of him just kind of freaking out on the top.
So many just great visuals.
When was the last time too? I have to, like, we had a steel cage like this, not the fencing steel cage, but the kind of open air cage, if you will.
I couldn't tell you. And I love this cage because it looks like a cage, you know, it looks stiff.
The scary fencing, like,
the fencing, I mean, you ran into a fence before or got thrown into a fence. You know, we used to, in my backyard wrestling days, used to, you know, throw each other into fences all the time. It didn't hurt,
right?
You know, the actual fencing just, it has total give to it. So this just looks so much stiffer and better. I love it, and I love the black, just kind of the Attitude Era version of the blue cage.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it just adds a different flair to it. Yeah, the blue, especially in this scenario, it just wouldn't look right.
You know, you and I have talked a lot about, like, how they should theme some of these Raw episodes or SmackDown episodes. You know, do an old school one where maybe every match is in the blue cage. What if you just said, hey, on SmackDown on Friday night, we're going old school with, you know, the old blue steel cage, and there's, you know, maybe four really good matches lined up. McMahon doing a blade job here, which looks awesome. It's getting some blood. But I mean, imagine that. Are you less likely or more likely to watch SmackDown? Well, you're more likely. So the ratings are going to go up, you know, just once a year. We're bringing in the blue steel cage, and we've got four killer matches. We've got Reigns and Kevin Owens. We've got, two women. We've got the women's tag team match, and then we've got, you know, a regular tag team match. Or so. I mean, anything, right? Just something cool like that. Why not? To win the match here.
Yeah, brought to you by Eichel.
Flipping him off again, and he's going back in.
Here's the iconic kind of shot. Yeah, of McMahon bloodied, dripping down his face, double birds, you know, and Austin could just hop down and win and then still do this. But nope, like, we're going back up. So, hey, you especially, like, you and I, like, not brought to you by Snickers, but this Monday's Raw brought to you by Eiko Pro, you know, like, yeah, you got the shirt, you know, we'd kind of watch that and do that. And yeah, and this, you know, and you and I have not talked about, but I know we shared a little, you know, thoughts on this was the oldest Royal Rumble.
Yeah. So this year's Royal Rumble, the average age was 39. Is that right? 39.7, if I remember.
It was up there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think the average participant was 39.7. There were, like, maybe two guys that were under 30 or three guys under 32, something like that. Yeah. So the talent in the Rumble was old. Yeah, look, I don't care. I mean, I'll tell you what I didn't like though. It's like the Kane, okay. Kane's kind of tied to the Rumble cause he has like the most eliminations ever and stuff. Fine. I guess I'm okay with that. Love Christian. I have no issue with Edge at all. I think it's a really cool story and the guy's still doing awesome work. Really enjoyed the Orton thing. The Hurricane thing was stupid. I'm like, of all the guys you could have brought back, you've done that before. Like bring someone
else. They did it last year. Yeah.
I know. I'm just like, why couldn't you bring someone else in? There's plenty of guys left that you know, can still work. Like bring in Tatanka, you know, like that would have been more fun.
39.4.
Okay.
And so, and you gave too much credit.
Here's another gripe I have right now. And I tweeted about it. Austin just hit the stunner. Here's another gripe I have. This Orton Edge feud,
yeah,
you blew it off. A year-long feud, two great matches, and the rubber match, the third match, the blow-off to the feud was a throwaway match on Raw with interference.
Yeah, right.
I hated it.
And now he's feuding with Alexa Bliss.
Why not just wait to do it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What's this?
Yeah. So, yeah, and you 16 out of
the Giant from WCW.
Climbing through the ring, Paul Wright.
White,
excuse me. Yes, my bad.
That's what they called him. They called him by his name initially.
At first, because they, yeah, you're outsiders, you know, not being able to use Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. Yeah.
And I believe he signed a 10-year contract, big contract at the time to make the jump. God, you know, that's one of the things I miss about wrestling is the jumps, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. It just doesn't happen like it used to. Well, that
looks pretty good at this point. This is before you put on all that weight.
And this would, and yeah, God, why not? You know, what was the last time he was on TV? He got a huge pop. Like, why didn't you have him come instead of Kane? Like, you know, right. Yeah, you could have done that. His TV show failed or whatever it was on Netflix. Yeah.
Tosses him into the cage.
But shenanigans.
So good.
The cage splits open and Austin swinging then out to the outside and a McMahon just looking at completely distraught, unsure of what to do. And only two wrestlers were under 32.
Wow.
Yep.
So Big Show's fuming.
But what a great way. We'll talk about it, but what an ending, you know?
I will say this, the way that they brought, I mean, this was cool the way they brought in Big Show, but dude, they put him, they just never really got him going. I mean, he should have just been a monster heel and they just, I don't know. They did not handle him right in this era. So, all right, well, let's go ahead and get into the aftermath.
Oh, it's time for the aftermath.
All right, initial thoughts.
It's great. I did not remember just how much of, I say, the match, like the match happened before the match. Yeah. Like, so your big spots outside of like the blade job and the finish were all before the bell even rung.
Dude, this is great. This was just great stuff. Crowd still going nuts. Facial reaction, Big Show's great. McMahon's
flipping the bird. Yep.
So now we're good to go for WrestleMania. Austin's getting his title shot. Oh, so good. So good. All right. Cool. Well, what happened afterwards?
So what do we got with the aftermath? Of course, we had the Paul White, the Big Show, if you will, making his debut during this match, breaking through the ring, you know, being underneath it for that whole match. You know, I'm curious how a man that big kind of sneaks to be under the ring, but you got that kind of happening. The Big Show, you know, going to, I say, really kind of fireman carry and then throwing Austin into the side of the cage, actually forcing the cage open, giving way, and then Austin able to drop to the floor, making him the victor. So So you got this one where you had really the lead, or, you know, the build, or really continuing the payoff to this match at WrestleMania. Now at this point, you have probably one of the top segments ever in wrestling. Of you have Austin interrupting The Rock, Vince, Shane, driving the beer truck to the ring. Just one of the kind of iconic, put Austin behind the wheel of something here and you're going to have magic. I remember I was at the Joe Louis Arena show when he drove the Zamboni into the side of the ring. And this was back in the Red Wings heyday. So you had that going for you. And then as long with that, of course, this beer truck just being, you know, leading to, you know, the milk truck and so many other things. But this was the kind of iconic moment of then spraying the three of them with the fire hose of, beer hose from the truck. And so, but then, you know, Austin then winning his shot, of course, at WrestleMania 15, beating The Rock at WrestleMania 15 to win his third WWF championship at that time. There was then a rematch. It was actually a Backlash the following pay-per-view. Shane was the referee during that one. You had during the match, Vince actually coming to the ring, you know, only to hand Austin back the smoking skull belt, which we are all probably one of the better belts that was ever created, take Shane out, Austin winning the match and, going from there. So he ended up losing the title. It was actually Over the Edge to the Undertaker. And so, and that kind of then leading as well to, to the kind of McMahon family, you know, just kind of everybody being involved with Linda and Stephanie and all this other stuff and the King of the Ring match, Vince and Shane kind of, you know, doing that. And so, it's just hard to beat. Like, there's just so much good happening and all that stuff. And so, just exciting to see. But then this is also leading. Austin, had lost the belt, kind of winning it back. It was at SummerSlam that year. He lost it to Mankind that year. It was a triple threat match with Triple H as well, too. And then you have the Corporation going, lining up with The Undertaker. And this is where we get into the Ministry of Darkness, which, of course, the Stephanie kind of being introduced at this point as well, and being the no matter how you feel about that, and the kidnapping of her. So and I had forgotten that she tried many times, she had tried to be kidnapped through storyline, but Undertaker trying to marry her and things like that, not always the most liked storylines at that point, but you do have that. But you also had McMahon, this feud just continuing and going on and on, McMahon being revealed as the higher power behind the corporate ministry, which getting the feud then going again with Austin and things like that. So just, and then this leading to, and mixed it up from earlier, but this leading to the, well, there was the ladder match earlier, the WrestleMania 2000 Fatal Four Way McMahon Corners, which we have it on our list. We are not going to be covering it this year, but we will eventually cover it at some point, or at least not covering it during this road to WrestleMania. But Triple H, Big Show, Foley, just nonsense. There's, just kind of craziness. So leading to that. And so, and then that leading into then the McMahon Helmsley era after all of this. And so, just like I said, you can take portions of this feud, you're going to get, different results, but at the same time, how well some of the stories worked with the results, but just kept going on and on. And really, it wasn't a bad thing either.
No, not at all.
So where are we at with the reviews? Kind of what was said about this match, things like this. Austin was ranked number one this 1999 on the PWI, which makes perfect sense. McMahon unranked, but that also makes sense. The match of the year was actually The Rock versus Mankind. That was the I Quit match at for the WWE Championship at Royal Rumble. But the feud of the year, like I said earlier, it was the 1998-1999 Austin versus McMahon. So what do you have here from the PW Torch? They actually gave this one 3.5 stars. Sunday night, Vince McMahon.
Really?
Yes. Hang on. I know. So yeah, that was PW Torch. I want to make sure I'm clear. 3.5. That's from Wade. Sunday night, Vince McMahon stepped into the ring for the first time official for his first ever official match. Not just a match, but a pay-per-view main event. And at 53 years old, he put in a performance that was actually better than many pay-per-view main eventers, especially former WWFers now atop WCW. The match was meticulously booked, yet it flowed naturally. Austin did a superb job carrying McMahon, walking him carefully through the match step by step, yet it was McMahon who, for the first time ever, was the star of the match. The bump that we've talked about for years to come of the match was before the match actually started. After about 10 minutes of Austin chasing the man, occasionally beating him on the outside of the ring, McMahon began clamming the cage to get away. Austin hit McMahon, knocking him off the cage. McMahon flew from near the top of the side of the cage to the announce table below. He landed flat backed with a thud, bounced off the table into the air at a half an inch or so. Then the table gave out and both he and the table collapsed on the floor. So some of the kind of fun write-ups with it as well too, just kind of the beat writers. And so Vince should get at least 100 high quality 8x10s made of various parts of his performance yesterday and distribute them to most of his crew. The man is 53 years old and a non-professional, but he outworked all but a handful of his named talent. The bump he took from the cage shot through the table would have been great for a talented worker with the instinct of a Michaels or Foley, but for Vince to do it with sheer guts, my hat is off to him. The card was a big thumbs down up to that point, but he may have saved it nearly all by himself. And of course, we can't, you know, not talk about the size of Vince's grapefruits. Vince really does have the balls the size of grapefruits. A great bump, a smart match, and a hell of a finish. Vince's in-ring debut is going to be one of the single greatest rookie outings in the history of wrestling, with China not far behind. So, interesting comparison there.
How does all of that get you to 3.5 stars?
Yeah, right. I know. And so, which is going to piss you off even more here, your favorite star giver, Dave Meltzer, only gave this 2.75 star. McMahon, who had never worked a lengthy match, was out there for 19 minutes between a lengthy pre-match brawl and an actual cage match, took one of the craziest bumps you'll ever see. It was far less limited as a performer than anyone had the right to be expected. There were moments where reality set in. The match was clearly based on the philosophy of the Undertaker versus Mankind Hell in a Cell match. That was long as there are two big spots to remember. It really doesn't matter if nothing happens in between or after. When the two actually started doing pro wrestling, brawling spots inside the cage, it was clear McMahon was not a wrestler and the crowd heat died despite it being the first actual singles match after being hyped for 1 year for arguably the hottest feud in the history of the wrestling industry, at least on this continent. But for the most part, the match was better than most WCW main events involving experienced and younger full-time wrestlers. 3.5 and 2.75. Tom, thoughts?
Absolute bullshit.
Yeah.
What? So think about this. The biggest star in the history of the business, the greatest heel in the history of the business, the owner of the company stepping into the ring for the first time ever, cage match, memorable spot that we can still see and remember to this day, even after all the big spots that have occurred in wrestling. Mm-hmm. Big surprise debut by a guy that's jumping from WCW. Great brawl. I mean, the visuals were great. The crowd's going nuts. I mean, this to me is as good as professional wrestling gets. And this is like an all-timer. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've probably never disagreed more with the reviews on anything that you've ever read than I do on this one. I can't disagree. Where do you poke holes in this thing? What, that Vince isn't a worker? That's the whole point. The guy's a fucking heel. Like, he's supposed to look like he's not a wrestler. He's supposed to get the shit kicked out of him. It's not supposed to be a smooth Tokyo Dome main event.
Right.
I don't get this at all. So look, I'll give my payoff score. This thing was almost flawless. It's at the height of the greatest rivalry in the history of professional wrestling. Dude, I have this at a 9.
Okay.
I mean, I think this is just off the charts great. It's you know, something that still holds up today. I mean, we're watching this match, what, 22 years later? And we're like, what a great match. What a great angle. This is fantastic, you know? So
yeah.
I got this thing at a 9. It's not a 10, but man, it's damn close. What about you?
One thing I was reading as I was kind of doing my reviews, it said, one could argue, and this is the quote, one could argue a staple of the Attitude Era is stories with a great setup leading to a payoff, no plug there, leading to a payoff of meh proportions. Luckily, we're here to talk about everything before the match. And in that regard, that is a home run. So I don't like, I disagree. Like even that, like I'm with you. Like I'm going to give it actually an 8.5. So I'm up there with you too. But I feel that like, it just, yeah. Like what are you expecting from a first time worker? Like, okay. Like, I think like, you know, probably one of the more notable debuts that we've had in recent years would have been like Ronda Rousey and her coming in and absolutely like, are you expecting Vince to come in and wrestle like that? Like, you know, she got praise, you know, from day one
to wrestle like that. It would be unrealistic if he was a wrestler. It's like Shane. He's not a wrestler. They're brawlers. That's the style. So I don't get it. What more do you want the guy to do? He came out looking great. It's not like he got winded. He got the shit kicked out of him. His offense looked fine. Everything he did was believable because it was done in a gimmicky way. It wasn't like he just straight up, like, you know, got into a brawl with the guy.
Well, and this is one too where, and we didn't spend a ton of time talking about it during the match or even kind of pointing it out, but it came up in the reviews. Like, this was his first match. Like, you know, that it doesn't make sense. And, you know, for, you know, you and I have been watching wrestling and everybody as long as we have, like, so this is 1999. So 22 years ago is when Vince first stepped into the ring. Now, granted, yes, he had been, you know, the corporation and been, you know, that kind of heel at the same time with that. But, you know, if this was the kind of the genesis of that, like, you know, and it kept building on it because this wasn't his last match, but also like, you know, we had talked about in the build on this one. And it's why I would give it like, you know, that even that extra half a point is because I thought that this was probably one of the better storyline cohesive builds that we've seen or talked about in a few months now. Like every piece of it made sense from, well, I'm not going to wrestle because I'm not, you know, I'm a part-timer. So, okay, well then the runner up gets it. Well, hang on. No, I don't like that. Like, I'm going to do a match instead. And we're going to put that on the line. It's like, well, hang on. Like, okay. Like I don't disagree with like match or I don't agree with matches. Like put the briefcase on the line for Money in the Bank or like, you know, it ebbs and flows for me, but this one, like putting that spot, you know, the WrestleMania spot on the line, like it makes sense. And you look at the long-term kind of scope of like, would you say like, if you take this feud to its end and you look at the kind of matches that we got from this, like overall was the payoff worth it? Yeah. In every aspect. Like, and like I said, there might be some stumbles along the way, but like this definitely wasn't one of them. Like this match, it made absolute sense why it was happening. Like, you know, and I say a match, half of it wasn't a match. It was just them brawling outside and Vince getting his ass kicked, which from a storyline perspective makes all the sense in the world. And so why, you know, to give it, you know, okay, like 3.5, fine, whatever, that's what it is. But 2.75, like even anything below 3, and internet, feel free, chime us in. Maybe Tom and I are missing something here. Like Twitter, you know, let us know what you're thinking. But I just don't understand it in the moment. Like what else was happening too in wrestling? We're like, oh, this is where we need to rank it. And like you said, for them to call like this could have been one of the greatest rookie performances ever. And, you know, the match was great. You got a blade job, all this other stuff. 2.75. Like it just doesn't add up. But 9 and 8.5. That's all right.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah.
So it was a good match and it was a lot of fun. So
yeah. Fun to watch. Good one overall. So final thoughts here, buddy. Send us home. What do you got? Anything?
Loved it. It was great. Fun episode. And I'm pumped for the one we're covering next week too. Again, this kind of on the road to WrestleMania, post Royal Rumble, building to WrestleMania. We have a really sneaky, good, underrated one to cover. So make sure to join us next week. And that's all I got.
Yeah, right. That's right. At Payoff Pod, let us know what you think about this one. I'm curious what the fans of the Payoff, what they're thinking.
At Payoff Pod everywhere. Until next week, I'm Tom. That's Jeff. And thank you for joining us on an all new episode of The Payoff.